Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Hello and welcome to Reality Check. I'm your host, Tony Pittman, and this is a special podcast-only edition of Reality Check dedicated exclusively to the blood type diet, as expounded by American naturopath Peter D'Adamo. On our regular broadcasts of Reality Check, we dealt with the blood type diet over four separate episodes. So what I've done for this special edition is cut and paste from those four episodes to create one handy podcast episode covering just the blood type diet. So if you've already listened to those original episodes, you can stop listening now. Otherwise, stay tuned and you'll hear the painstaking and sometimes painful Reality Check take on the pseudoscientific garbage that is Dr. D'Adamo's blood type diet. So don't say we didn't warn you. Let's have a look at our second pseudoscientific topic for this evening, and that is the so-called blood type diet. And in particular, we'll be looking at the blood type diet invented by Dr. Peter D'Adamo in his best-selling book, Eat Right for Your Type. So let me start out by explaining to you the theory of the blood type diet as Dr. D'Adamo explains it. Then we'll look a little more carefully at some of the claims that Dr. D'Adamo makes and whether they stand up to scrutiny and whether it is in fact a good idea for you to follow the blood type diet. So first, let me explain to you Dr. D'Adamo's theory as he presents it. Not necessarily a true theory, but this is what he says. So according to the good doctor, your ideal diet depends on your blood type. That is whether you are A, B, O, or AB. Now, let me quote from the book here. The blood type diet is, and I quote, "the individualized diet solution to staying healthy, living longer, and achieving your ideal weight. Your blood type is the key that unlocks the door to the mysteries of health, disease, longevity, physical vitality and emotional strength. Your blood type determines your susceptibility to illness, which foods you should eat and how you should exercise. It is a factor in your energy levels, the efficiency with which you burn calories, your emotional response to stress, and perhaps even your personality." Wow, sounds pretty good, doesn't it? But how does it work? Well, let's have a look. This is what the doctor says. Apparently, it's got to do with the evolution of the blood types. Now, according to Dr. D'Adamo, originally all humans were type O. This was back when we were all hunter-gatherers in Africa, supposedly. As Dr. D'Adamo says, O is for old. That's how you can remember. So these type O hunter-gatherers were out there on the savanna plains hunting woolly mammoths and fighting off saber-toothed tigers and all that stuff, and basically they were eating a lot of meat. But then, about 20,000 years ago, we humans started to change to a more domesticated agrarian lifestyle. And at this time, supposedly, type A blood group first appeared. So according to the doctor, A is for agrarian. You get it? O is for old, A is for agrarian. Easy to remember. So when we became A's, we all became a bit more docile, and we started to eat a lot of wheat and grains and crops and things, and we didn't really eat so much meat. But then, in the Himalayas about 12,000 years ago, blood type B appeared, as there were large-scale migrations out of Africa into Europe and Asia and America. and they became the great tribes of the steppe dwellers who dominated the Eurasian plains. And according to the doctor, B is for balance. Then, only in the last 1,000 years apparently, you started to get intermingling of the Caucasian type A's and the Mongolian type B's, and that created the hybrid type AB. And in Dr. D'Adamo's alphabet, AB is for modern. So, got that? We all started out as aggressive hunter-gatherer type O's, then some of us became domesticated, docile, agrarian type A's, then later some became balanced type B's, and in recent years we've had intermingling to produce modern type AB's. So could this history, if in fact it is true, and we'll get to that later, could this history be a clue to what our ideal diets should be? Well, as it turns out, Dr. D'Adamo has discovered that yes, it is a very important indicator of what we should eat. And at this point in the book, Dr. D'Adamo gets into a bit of an investigation into the science of blood types. He says, and I quote, "A chemical reaction occurs between your blood and the foods that you eat. This reaction is part of your genetic inheritance. It is amazing but true today. In the late 20th century, when he wrote the book, your immune and your digestive systems still maintain a favoritism for foods that your blood type ancestors ate." So there you go. Quite simple, really. Maybe actually too simple. Anyway, the key to all this, particularly that chemical reaction between your blood and the food you eat, is lectins. Lectins are proteins found in food, and according to the doctor, they have agglutinating properties that affect your blood. That is, they cause your blood cells to agglutinate or clump together. Let me quote from the good doctor once again. "When you eat a food containing protein lectins that are incompatible with your blood type antigen, the lectins target an organ or bodily system, the kidney, liver, stomach, brain, etc., and begin to agglutinate blood cells in that area. Many food lectins have characteristics that are close enough to a certain blood type antigen to make it an enemy to another. For example, milk has B-like qualities. If a person with type A drinks milk, their system will immediately start the agglutination process in order to reject it." Now, that sounds pretty serious to me, targeting your organs, agglutinating blood cells. But luckily for us, Dr. D'Adamo has it all worked out, and his book provides pages and pages of the foods that are safe for your blood type, those that are neutral for your blood type, and those that are dangerous. He also has loads of recipes, making it so easy to follow his diet. And he has a very convenient website where you can order lots of books and food products and home blood typing kits, which are actually quite expensive, but then again, you don't want your brain to agglutinate, do you? Which it actually might do if you actually read this ridiculous book, but I digress. So, basically, that is Dr. D'Adamo's amazing, groundbreaking theory in a nutshell. Then, the rest of his book is just filled with amazing case studies. By the way, not clinical trials to test his theories, but just amazing anecdotes where the good doctor meets a very sick person and puts them on his blood type diet, and amazingly, they get better. But I will spare you the details of all those stories. Now, we don't have much time left, but the one thing I want to say today is that just because someone wrote a book, even a long book of 300 pages or so, and just because he puts the title doctor in front of his name, doesn't mean you can believe what you read. We live in a society where free speech is a fundamental principle, and that basically means that people can write whatever they want and make up whatever they want and jazz it all up with scientific-sounding words and theories and make it all sound very new and amazing and revolutionary, and then they can market it like crazy and sell lots and lots of copies and go on talk shows and get it into the New York Times bestseller list and make lots and lots of dollars, but it doesn't mean you can believe what they wrote. And in the case of Dr. Peter Dedemo and his blood type diet, it's all basically, as the Germans would say, Scheiße, or as the French would say, merde. All right, so that gives you a clue as to what's coming up next week.
Over 200 volunteers bring you joy every week. Joy 94.9.
What I want to do today is to get into a bit of analysis of the theories that Dr. Dedemo puts forward in his book and see if they stand up to scientific examination or not. First, just as a preliminary point, I'd like to note that the title doctor that Dr. Dedemo uses doesn't actually mean that he's a medical doctor, nor does it mean that he has a PhD. He calls himself a doctor of naturopathy and says on his website that he studied naturopathy in Seattle, Washington. So that might be the first clue that what we're dealing with here may not be entirely grounded in science and careful research. Naturopaths are not generally known for their adherence to science and critical thinking. Now, of course, I don't want to make the logical fallacy here of argument from authority, or in this case, argument from lack of authority. In other words, I don't want to say that just because he's a naturopath, his theories won't be scientifically sound. That would be a very uncritical assumption to make. His theories may well be sound. What we must do as skeptics is examine those theories and claims as objectively as possible and independently of who's making them. And a second preliminary point that I wanted to mention is that I received a comment from one listener from last week that Dr. Dedemo's theories that I went through last episode are not immediately obviously pseudoscientific. In fact, at first glance, they seem quite plausible. And that's absolutely true. With the blood type diet, we're not dealing with a claim that is obviously outlandish and absurd, as many claims of supposed inventions or discoveries are. And I confess that last episode I was adopting a certain disparaging tone at times when I was describing Dr. Dedemo's theories, when there was actually nothing that was obviously wrong with them or stupid about them. So I may have been getting a little bit ahead of myself there because I know what's coming. And frankly, to be as diplomatic as possible, I have little respect for Dr. Dedemo and how he markets his books and puts himself out there as an authority. But I don't want to jump to the end already, and I don't want to poison the well before we start, so let's just get into it. A detailed examination of Dr. Dedemo's theories. Dr. Dedemo claims that our ideal diet depends on our ABO blood type, and he constructs his theory through a series of building blocks. The first of these building blocks involves looking at the evolution of human ABO blood types and how they related to changes in human diet, and concluding from that that people should eat foods corresponding with what their blood type ancestors used to eat. Now, before launching into an examination of the real history of human blood types and whether Dr. Dedemo actually gets that right or not, I just wanted to step back for a moment and analyze Dr. Dedemo's argument based purely on what he says, without looking at what any scientists may have said about it. So if you think about what the doctor is saying for a little while, it quite soon becomes pretty clear that there's a problem with the point he makes about evolution of human blood types and the diets that we should follow today. So let's imagine that everything that Dr. Dedemo says about human blood type evolution is true. And let's just look at the simple claim that type O's ate lots of meat. They were the first humans. And then 20,000 years ago, type A's appeared and they became agrarian and they started eating lots of grains. Even if that were true, it would be ridiculous to suggest that that should be the guide to what we should eat today. Because Dr. Dodamo hasn't shown that the reason the blood type changed was because the diet changed. That these two things, blood type and diet, are linked. Even if blood type A did arise at about the same time that humans started growing crops, that doesn't mean that that change in blood type was related to diet. It could have been related to any one of a myriad of other factors. Humans started to eat grains, and at roughly the same time, a mutation in the gene for a particular protein on the surface of the red blood cell occurred that brought about blood type A, and that mutation stuck around in the population. Well, so what? It doesn't mean it was related to diet. Maybe it was a completely neutral mutation and gave no evolutionary advantage, but also no disadvantage, so it just stayed around. Maybe it did give a slight evolutionary advantage to those with type A, but this was related to immunity to smallpox or plague or some other disease and wasn't connected to diet. So just because the two things happened at around the same time, the appearance of type A and the beginnings of cultivating grains, wouldn't mean that they are necessarily interconnected or that one is the cause of the other. And after all, let's remember what we're talking about here. Blood type is determined by a protein on the surface of red blood cells. And the function of red blood cells is to transfer oxygen from the lungs to the body's tissues and then bring carbon dioxide back to the lungs. So red blood cells don't play an important role in digestion. And also, Dr. Dodamo doesn't say that type O's and type A's then lived separately and that the O's kept eating only meat and the type A's kept eating only grains, and then the O's that ate grains got sick and weak and couldn't reproduce as well, and then the same happened to the type A's that ate lots of meat. Because if blood type actually were so important to diet, that is what would have had to have happened for there to be evolutionary changes here. In fact, Dr. Dodamo doesn't go into much detail at all about what happened between the arrival of blood A on the scene and then today. He makes very broad claims about what our ancestors supposedly ate and then jumps ahead to today and says what we should eat. And let's also consider for a moment the implications of what he's saying. Now, I think most people are familiar with the basic genetics of blood type, that we all carry two alleles for blood type, and that the A and B are dominant and the O allele is recessive. So that means if you are AO, that is with the A allele on one chromosome and the O allele on the other chromosome, you will be type A. Also, if you are AA. But if you have the O allele on both chromosomes, you'll be type O. Right? That's just classic high school dominant recessive inheritance. So let's look at a hypothetical family. Well, hypothetical because I'm using it as an example here, but there must be millions of real families like this in the world. So in this family, the mother is blood type A and is genetically AO. The father is blood type B and genetically BO. They have two children. One is blood type AB and one is type O. That is a perfectly plausible situation. So within the same family unit, you have all four blood types. So what Dr. Dodamo is saying is that each member of this family should be eating very, very different diets. And then remember that what happened in this family can happen in the next generation and the next and the next. So you go back hundreds of generations and find a series of ever-changing A's and B's and O's and AB's every step. So if your blood type really were that important to your health, as Dr. Dodamo says, This wouldn't happen. Evolution just doesn't work like that. Yet, Dr. Didamo says, and I quote, "Your blood type is a more reliable measure of your identity than race, culture, or geography." A very bold claim. So what Dr. Didamo is really saying is that I have more in common with some ancient ancestor than with my immediate family. Let me finally quote Dr. Edward Blondes from his review of Dr. Didamo's book, which is available online. Dr. Blondes says, and I quote, "There is no question that over the millennia there has been an infinite variety of genetic mixing. It makes it all a bit of a stretch to say, for example, that a type O today has the same genetic imperatives as a type O roaming the savannah with spear in hand." A bit of a stretch indeed.
Hi, we're Bananarama, and you're listening to
Joy Melbourne 94.9.
Mm-mm.
I have to say, when I read the doctor's description of the history of human blood types, it seemed perfectly reasonable to me, as I suspect it would to most people. The evolution of human blood types is not something that is generally well known. In fact, when I went to investigate it myself, I had trouble finding anything at all written about it. It seems, in fact, that it is something that only a few scientists in the world who are investigating this field really have much knowledge about. So let's see what Dr. Didamo says about it and compare that with what those scientists say. So just a quick refresher from last week. In a nutshell, Dr. Didamo says that all humans began as type O's. Then the type A's appeared about 20,000 years ago. Then the type B arose about 12 or 13,000 years ago. And finally, the type AB's first arose about 1,000 years ago. Hang on. What was that last one? Type AB's only began to appear 1,000 years ago? Well, that is exactly what Dr. Didamo says. He says, and I quote, "Until 10 or 12 centuries ago, there was no type AB blood." Once again, a rather bold claim there from the doctor. And this was, in fact, the first clue for me that maybe Dr. Didamo's facts here were not quite as accurate as they may have first appeared. 1,000 years ago, that would be about the year 1000 AD. That's the middle of the Middle Ages. That's about the time of the Norman conquest of England in 1066. In evolutionary terms, that is extremely recent. So I did some investigation and I contacted some experts around the world who are working in the field of paleontology, anthropology, genetics, and human evolution. And I'm afraid to say that what they told me doesn't look too good for the first building block of Dr. Didamo's theory. The first indication that all is not well in Dr. Didamo's theory is that other primates also have ABO blood types. For example, chimpanzees are mostly type A with some type O's. This would appear to indicate that at least one of the ABO blood types actually arose not 10 or 20,000 years ago, but millions of years ago, before humans and chimpanzees branched off the evolutionary tree to go their separate ways. The two most important scientific studies published on this topic in recent years support that theory. They are a paper published by Saito and Yamamoto in 1997, and one published just last year by a scientist called Francesc Calafell and five other researchers from the Institute of Evolutionary Biology at the Pompeu Fabra University in Barcelona, and published in the journal Human Genetics. In that most recent paper, the scientists studied hundreds of DNA sequences from around the world and concluded that the ancestral human blood type was type A. This blood type was shared with chimpanzees and bonobos. The gene for blood type B then arose 3.5 million years ago after humans had split from the other primates. And the gene for the O allele actually arose through mutation three different times independently during human evolution. And those type O's appeared at about 2.5 and 1.15 million years ago, and also at about 316,000 years ago. So, it would seem that the first building block of Dr. Dodamo's blood type diet has been completely blown out of the water. Humans didn't begin as type O's. They began as type A's. Type B's didn't arise about 12,000 years ago, but about 3.5 million years ago. And type AB's didn't just appear 1,000 years ago in the Middle Ages. But once type B's arose and were living with type A's, there would have to have been type AB's at the same time. So that is 3.5 million years ago, not 1,000 years ago. And then the type O's were, in fact, the last to appear, and they appeared independently three times over the last 2.5 million years. So, Dr. Dodamo, I hate to say it, but you are wrong in the extreme. Wrong in the order in which the human blood types appeared, and orders of magnitude wrong in the times at which they appeared. And the fact that Dr. Dodamo is so wrong in the order and times of appearance of human ABO blood types throws a big spanner into how his theory basically works, because his whole diet is based on the idea that because type O's were hunter-gatherers and ate lots of meat and animal protein thousands of years ago, that's the ideal diet for type O's today. And then because type A's were the docile agrarians and ate lots of cereals thousands of years ago, then type A's today should do the same. But just as we've seen just now, that's not true. Type O's didn't eat any more meat than the other blood types, and type A's didn't eat any more grains than the other blood types. All four blood types had arisen hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years before humans started to change their diet through growing crops and domesticating animals about 12,000 years ago. So that means all four blood types have always eaten the same diet, whether that be mostly meat or mostly grains or whatever. So it's not looking too good for Dr. Dodamo's blood type diet so far. But that doesn't mean the whole thing is all bunk. It may still be true that blood type determines what you should eat for optimum health and well-being. Can Dr. Dodamo's theory be saved? Will he snatch victory from the jaws of defeat? Well, to find out, dear listener, I'm afraid that you're going to have to come back at the same time next week. Originally, I thought I would be able to deal with Dr. Dodamo's blood type diet in one episode, but it looks as if we're going to need several episodes to get through it. It's just that there is so much wrong with what he says, but not wrong in a way that's immediately apparent. So that takes time to deal with properly. Well, at least I hope we're all learning something along the way. Now, just quickly, before I finish today's section on the blood type diet, I would like to thank those experts who I contacted and who helped me with information on the evolution of human blood types. And so in Australia, that's big thanks to Professor Simon Eastiel, Professor Masij Henneberg, and Dr. Varsha Pilbrow. And in the United States, big thanks to Dr. John Relathford, Dr. John Hawkes, Professor Jim Mielke, and Professor Luca Cavalli-Sforza. Thank you very much to all of those people.
Joy.
94.9.
Hello, we're the Kransky sisters on Joy 94.9.
Over 200 volunteers bring you joy every week. Joy 94.9.
What I want to do today is continue the analysis of the rest of Dr. D'Adamo's theories and see if they, unlike his previous one, might be able to stand up to critical scrutiny. So at the point where we left off last time, the theoretical basis for Dr. D'Adamo's blood type diet wasn't looking too good. However, the fact that Dr. D'Adamo stumbled at the first hurdle doesn't mean his diet theory is pure baloney. Despite the fact that he was wrong in describing how the blood types evolved, it may still be true that blood types are important in determining your ideal diet. Maybe the next building block in his theory really does have some truth behind it. Let's take a look. Now, the subject of that next building block is lectins. Now, don't be confused by the word lectins. Lectins are just a class of proteins found in foods. And so just to remind you, Dr. D'Adamo says that we should eat what our blood type ancestors ate, and the reason we should do that is because, supposedly, if you eat the wrong foods, the lectins in those foods, that is the proteins, get digested and absorbed into the bloodstream and then react chemically with your red blood cells and cause them to agglutinate, that is to form clumps, form clots in the bloodstream. Now that sounds very nasty, doesn't it? So if you're a type O and you're supposed to be eating a lot of meat and animal protein, but then one day you eat bread made from wheat, well, according to the doctor, you're going to get a lot of blood clots forming in your vital organs. And if you do that every day, you're going to get a lot of blood clots in all your organs. And frankly, that doesn't sound healthy at all. But how does Dr. D'Adamo know all this about lectins and their agglutinating effects on different blood types? Well, he says, and I quote, "I know because the effects of lectins on different blood types are not just a theory. They're based on science. I've tested virtually all common foods for blood type reactions. I can purchase isolated lectins from foods such as peanuts, lentils, wheat or meat, and the results are visible under the microscope. I can see them agglutinating cells in the affected blood type." End quote. Well, there you go. Apparently, the good doctor knows how to do science. He has a microscope, at least. Now, I don't want to get into the question here of whether Dr. D'Adamo really does know anything about science, because we'd be here for hours, if not days. And I'm not going to get into what he means by making that distinction between what he calls science and what he calls just a theory. And I'm not even going to question his methodology in any way. I'm not going to question whether his observations were double-blinded or whether he may have left himself open to a certain subjective bias. And even the question of whether observing the effect of food lectins on red blood cells on a microscope slide can have any relevance at all to what actually goes on in the bloodstream after those lectins have been digested and broken down and are under very, very different conditions. I'm not going to get into any of that. Now, somehow, I don't think that Dr. D'Adamo would recognize real science even if he fell over it. But let's just take him at his word for the moment. And let's stick to the exact claim that he's making, that lectins enter the bloodstream and cause clumps of red blood cells. and that different lectins affect different blood types. So let's think about that claim for a moment. Having red blood cells agglutinated in your bloodstream is not a trivial thing. It's serious and potentially life-threatening. It basically means the food that you're eating is causing irreversible blood clots to form in your circulation. Now, red blood cells have to pass through tiny capillaries throughout the body to deliver oxygen. Sometimes those capillaries are so narrow that the red blood cells can only pass in single file. So if major blood clots were forming throughout our body every time we ate, our capillaries would very quickly get blocked and our tissues would get damaged, and it seems to me that we probably wouldn't live very long. And as most people have not been enlightened by the good doctor, and in their blind ignorance they don't follow their blood type diet, then we can assume that most people are eating agglutinating lectins several times every day. And so their bloodstream is getting filled with clumps of red blood cells, and their kidney and liver and brain and other organs are getting nasty damage done to them constantly, after every meal, in fact. So you would expect to see people getting fatal or at least debilitating conditions fairly quickly. Now let me quote here from Michael Klaper, MD, who wrote the entry on the blood type diet in Skeptic, the Skeptic's Dictionary. Dr. Klaper says, and I quote, "Such a syndrome of organ failures due to lectin-induced microinfarctions of the brain, heart, kidneys, retinas, and adrenals would be well known to pathologists and other medical scientists. It would not be a subtle disease. In the pathology texts, there would be clear descriptions, complete with photographs taken through high-power optical microscopes, as well as electron microscopes, of damage from lectin deposits and blood agglutination in most major organ systems. The existence and intricacies of such a widespread disease would be as common knowledge among physicians and cell scientists as atherosclerosis is today. Yet I am aware of no such descriptions in the pathologic literature. No pathologist I know has ever mentioned tissue infarction from lectin-induced red cell agglutination as a cause of any disease in humans." End quote. Well, how mysterious. It seems that this terrible thing that occurs when you eat the wrong foods for your blood type is only known to Dr. Tadamo. He's the only one who's discovered it, and no one else has ever seen any sign of it. Maybe it's a bit like the fairies at the bottom of the garden. So once again, Dr. Tadamo, it looks like you are completely and spectacularly wrong. This terrible condition that you say occurs if you eat the wrong food for your blood type doesn't actually exist. Well, doesn't exist outside of the pages of your best-selling book, that is. So, at this point, it seems that all the building blocks of Dr. Tadamo's theory are falling down like a house of cards. The good doctor really doesn't have much of a leg to stand on at this stage. Yet, there is still hope. Okay, so maybe he didn't get the evolutionary stuff quite right. And alright, maybe his description of the mechanism of exactly what happens when you eat the wrong foods is, well, slightly unsupported by the evidence, shall we say. But it still may be true that eating according to your blood type does keep you more healthy. I mean, the good doctor must have investigated that, right? I mean, there must be studies to show that, right? Well, stay tuned, and when we come back after this song, all will be revealed here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9.
Joy.
Joy.
94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Now, let's get back into our deep and probing analysis of Dr. D'Adamo's theories. Now let's take a step back here. Let's look at what the doctor is saying. He's saying that you can be healthier, have more energy, maintain your ideal weight, etc., etc., by eating foods compatible with your blood type. So if I simply heard that claim and nothing else, I wouldn't be investigating the evolution of blood type. I wouldn't even be looking for blood clots in tissues and organs. I would be thinking, oh, okay, so I guess the doctor must have discovered some correlation here between blood type and various diet-related diseases or symptoms. Then I guess he must have done some clinical trials to prove his theory, right? I mean, he must have had various sample groups of different blood types and put them on different diets and then recorded certain objective measures of health and fitness and weight, etc., over a period of time. Or maybe he performed some large-scale, long-term population studies. I mean, they would be ideal for this type of thing. You could collect data on three things: medical history, eating habits, and blood types, and collect it from a large sample, preferably thousands of people, over a long period of time, preferably decades. Maybe that data has already been collected by health services somewhere. I don't know, in Iceland or Sweden or somewhere, and you just have to collate it all and organize it and then analyze it. And then you'd see if there is any significant correlation between blood type, what they ate, and how healthy they were, and the types of diseases they had. Right? I mean, that's what you would expect him to do with a theory like this. So, despite the lack of foundation for the other building blocks in his theory, those kinds of good quality clinical trials or large-scale population studies would be very convincing evidence that Dr. D'Adamo is onto something. So I guess, loving science as he does, Dr. D'Adamo would have performed those types of studies, or at least used the data from those studies performed by other people, right? Right, I mean, that's basically what he needs to prove his theory. So, I mean, he would have done that, right? Oh, I see. No, he actually didn't do that type of study. And, he doesn't refer to any studies that show that because, well, maybe because there are no studies that show that. So that's not very helpful. Oh, but wait. No, I get it. Instead of all those confusing and complicated scientific studies and all that, you know, collecting results and statistical analysis and all those confusing numbers and all that hard work, ooh, no. Dr. D'Adamo has a much better way to prove his theory, and that is with his own experience with his patients. Yes. Anecdotes, in other words. He just recounts all those experiences with all those patients that he met who were very ill, and when he put them on his blood type diet, they all miraculously got better. Well, there you go, Doctor. If you say so, I guess we have to believe you. I'm certainly convinced. Not. As Mark Chrislip, the presenter of the Quackcast podcast, always says, the plural of anecdote is anecdotes, not evidence. All those stories and all those case studies that Dr. D'Adamo cites on page after page in his book, of all those people who apparently got much healthier by following the blood type diet, don't prove his theory in any way. They are all cherry-picked. They are all subject to the subjective bias of the doctor. And they don't include all the cases that didn't work, or where nothing happened. Only a study conducted using careful scientific methodology to remove biases would begin to add any credence to Dr. D'Adamo's blood type diet theory. But as far as I know, a study like that that would support his theory doesn't exist. So, we have to conclude that the blood type diet expounded in Dr. D'Adamo's book, Eat Right for Your Type, is a load of bunk, flim-flam, and tommy-rot, and has no scientific basis whatsoever. It certainly has sold a lot of books and made a lot of money for Dr. D'Adamo, but there is no reason to believe that it has any credibility at all. So, that concludes our analysis of the theory behind the blood type diet. Next week, I want to come back briefly to Dr. D'Adamo and to do two things. The first is that I want to look a little bit more at the science of blood type, in that blood type is not completely benign. Your blood type actually does have a slight effect on your susceptibility to certain diseases. It's got nothing to do with diet, but certain diseases, it seems, are slightly more or less common in certain blood types. And I have to admit, I've really tried to control myself a lot in these last few episodes, and I've generally tried to treat Dr. D'Adamo's claims seriously and examine them closely and critically. But the second thing I want to do next week is point out just what a douchebag Dr. D'Adamo really is, how his ignorance shines through certain passages of his book in so many ways, what a painful experience it is to read his stupid book, and finally, how he is actually hurting people through what he says. So for all that, tune in to Reality Check next week.
Today is a wonderful day with Joy 94.9.
What I want to do on the show today is first look at a bit of the real science behind blood type and disease, and secondly, have some fun by pointing out some of the more stupid things that Dr. D'Adamo says in his highly stupid book. So first, let's look a little bit at the real science behind blood type and diseases. So first of all, what exactly are we talking about when we talk about blood type? Well, we've done so much talking about blood types until now, but we've never actually got down to the nitty-gritty of what the ABO blood type really refers to. So what we're talking about is the red blood cells. They're the ones that contain millions of hemoglobin molecules, and their role is to transport oxygen from the lungs to the body's tissues. And specifically what we're talking about is a protein on the surface of the red blood cells. Well, actually, it's called a glycoprotein. So that's basically a protein with a few sugar rings hanging off it. So one kind of glycoprotein on the cell surface is the kind that determines your ABO blood type. The type A glycoproteins have an extra little sugar ring on top. The type Bs have a slightly different sugar ring, and the type Os have no sugar ring. So it's those sugar rings that act as antigens, that is, they are recognized by the body's immune system and provoke an immune response if they're not what the body expects. And that's why blood cells from people with blood type O can be given to anybody, because they don't have that extra little sugar ring on their surface, so they don't provoke an immune reaction in other humans. Other humans just accept those red blood cells as their own because they don't see that sugar ring to alert them that it's foreign. Now, the ABO glycoproteins are not the only ones on the surface of red blood cells. There are actually scores of other kinds of surface proteins. Therefore, other ways to classify blood types, such as the MNS blood group system, or the Kell system, or the Lewis system. And of course, there is also the rhesus system, which most people know about. This is whether you are rhesus positive or negative. So that's what people talk about when they say, I'm O positive. That means that they have the rhesus protein on the surface of their blood cells to make them positive. So if there are so many proteins on the surface of our red blood cells and so many different groups, blood groups to classify us by, why all this focus on the ABO blood system? Well, the answer is basically because the ABO and the rhesus systems are the most important for doing blood transfusions and also for organ transplants. Those ABO blood groups are the ones that provoke particularly strong responses in the immune system, and so incompatibility in that system can cause serious complications and even death. That's why they're the most important ones to know. I should also mention that the presence or absence of that little sugar ring on the surface of the blood cell apparently has no effect on the functioning of the cell. The cell still carries its hemoglobin around the body just as it's supposed to do. Okay, so now that we know exactly what we're talking about, well, more or less, let's look at the real science behind blood type and disease, because it turns out that there is actually a correlation between certain blood types and some diseases. One important fact that would appear to indicate this is the fact that blood type distribution is not uniform across the world. Certain regions have higher incidences of one type or another. For example, blood types B and AB didn't exist amongst Australian Aborigines before the arrival of Europeans. Australian Aborigines were all O or A, that's it. Whereas the Ainu in northern Japan have a very high incidence of blood types B and AB. And you can see these types of variations in populations throughout the world. So this situation appears to have come about as a result of what is called balancing selection. That is, at different times in history, natural selection has favored a certain blood type, or even a combination of blood types, probably because they conferred resistance to diseases that were attacking the population at that time. For example, it appears that people with blood type A may be slightly more susceptible to smallpox, and blood type O people are slightly more prone to get plague and cholera. Yet, at the same time, blood type O people are more resistant to rheumatic fever and possibly syphilis. So when epidemics hit a certain population, they will probably change the ABO gene frequencies in the surviving population. If smallpox hits, it will probably kill a disproportionate number of type A people, whereas if it's bubonic plague that comes along, then the type A's may survive better, and it will be the type O's that are killed in higher numbers. Thus, these arbitrary waves of infectious diseases over time can have a pretty significant impact on the frequencies of the ABO blood types in any given population. For example, India has a relatively high frequency of blood type B, which may be partly due to selection against type A people when smallpox epidemics came around, and type O when bubonic plague came along. But why should viruses or bacteria be slightly more lethal for some blood types and not others? Well, one theory is that the proteins, these glycoproteins on the cell membrane of these microbes, are very similar to the A, B, or O antigens, glycoproteins, on the red blood cells. And therefore, the microbes can sometimes escape detection by the host's immune system. Scientists have also found that certain ABO blood types are slightly more susceptible to certain types of cancers. For example, type B has a slightly higher risk of getting pancreatic cancer, whereas type O's have a slightly higher risk of stomach cancer. So no one knows exactly why, but I have read that it may not necessarily be determined by the blood type itself, but could be a nearby gene on the same chromosome that causes that higher risk. So still an area under a lot of scientific investigation. It is also well documented that people with blood type O have a slightly higher risk of developing stomach ulcers. And the reason for this is because stomach ulcers are caused by Helicobacter pylori, a bacterium with a special affinity, apparently, for the proteins on type O red blood cells. So, although Dr. D'Adamo was completely wrong in all his theories about blood type and diet, it turns out that the notion that blood type is related to our susceptibility to certain diseases is one with scientific validity. Of course, this discovery didn't come about in any way due to the amazing insights of Dr. D'Adamo. It came about through real scientists doing real, careful scientific research. Something I think Dr. D'Adamo wouldn't even recognize if you hit him over the head with it.
Joy. 94.9.
Hi, I'm Cindy Lauper, and if you just want to have fun, do you? Keep listening to Joy 94.9 FM.
Now, let's get into the final part of our analysis of Dr. D'Adamo's blood type diet. After all that heavy science in the first part of the show, I think it's time to relax, let our hair down, for those of us who have hair, and have a bit of a laugh at Dr. D'Adamo's expense, because he really does deserve it. So first of all, I really would like to make an apology here on Reality Check, because in episode 5, I referred to Dr. D'Adamo as a douchebag. So I'd like to apologize most sincerely. I spoke there in haste without having all the facts, because I confess I didn't actually know what a douchebag was. And so, as a good skeptic concerned about facts and evidence, I looked up the meaning of douchebag and I discovered that a douchebag is a bag for holding the fluid used in douching, that is vaginal or rectal irrigation. So knowing that now, I really must apologize because I see that douchebags actually do serve a useful function in this world. So I would like to apologize most sincerely to all the douchebags out there for comparing you with Dr. D'Adamo. You douchebags are just doing your thing and serving a useful purpose in the world, which is more than can be said for Dr. D'Adamo. So, speaking of Dr. D'Adamo, what I wanted to do now is point out some of the more, how shall I put it, interesting passages from Dr. D'Adamo's book that really highlight how ignorant he is and what a mind-numbing experience it is to read him. First up, an example of his eloquent style. Here's a quote from the first chapter of Dr. D'Adamo's book. Given the amount of available research data, it is amazing that the effects of blood type on our health have not received the measure of attention that they deserve. But now I am prepared to make that information available, not just to my fellow scientists and colleagues in the medical community, but to you. Don't you just love the way he talks about my fellow scientists? Oh, excuse me. Sorry, listener. It's just that every time I read that passage, for some strange reason, I feel vomit rising into my mouth. Sorry. Anyway, so this kind of passage is a big red flag that indicates that what we're dealing with here is highly likely to be pseudoscience. The idea that he, one lone supposed genius, has made this amazing discovery that the rest of the world is ignoring, and he's decided, out of the goodness of his heart, to make this information available to you, the reader. Also note how he decided not to take the route of first publishing his supposed findings in a peer-reviewed scientific journal, but rather to simply put them in a book that's being marketed strenuously to the general public. I wonder why he chose that route. Well, now let's look at some other revealing quotes from the scintillating prose of Dr. D'Adamo. And believe me, his book is packed full of quotes as stupid as these ones. I'm just going to give you an illustrative sample. At one point in his fascinating discussion of lectins, he says this: "Once the intact lectin protein settles somewhere in your body, it literally has a magnetic effect on the cells in that region." Wow. Really, Dr. D'Adamo? It literally has a magnetic effect? You really mean that? Well, let's see. There are three possible explanations for this statement. To literally have a magnetic effect, we'd need to have magnetically active substances, which are basically iron, nickel, or cobalt. Now, a lectin, which is a protein, doesn't contain any iron, nickel, or cobalt. So maybe what Dr. D'Adamo is suggesting is that the carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen atoms in the lectin, as well as in the cells of the body, all spontaneously convert into iron, nickel, and cobalt atoms with magnetic properties and start to attract each other. Maybe some type of nuclear fusion occurs to leap up the periodic table from carbon with 6 protons in its nucleus to iron with 26. Now, that's never been observed or even posited by anyone in the history of science, but then again, as we've seen, Dr. D'Adamo is not averse to making bold statements. So maybe that's what he means. Then again, there is a second possibility, and that is that when Dr. D'Adamo says that lectins literally have a magnetic effect, he actually doesn't know what the word literally means. And then, of course, there is a third possibility, and that is that the good doctor would know what the word literally means if you actually sat him down and asked him, but these questions of semantics are so trivial, and frankly, who are we to question the eloquent prose that comes flowing from his fingertips when he sits down at his keyboard to churn out his latest best-selling book? I mean, please, how petty can we get? Well, we can get a little more petty because there is one other quote that I would really like to bring your attention to, dear listener, and that is this one. "Blood is a force of nature, the élan vital that has sustained us since time immemorial. A single drop of blood, too small to see with the naked eye, contains the entire genetic code of a human being. The DNA blueprint is intact and replicated within us endlessly through our blood." Oh, right, Dr. D'Adamo. Okay. I think that to anyone with a basic high school knowledge of biology, that sentence is unintelligible. The best you could say about it is that it's misleading. What has blood got to do with DNA replication? DNA is replicated when cells divide. That's got nothing to do with blood. And it's odd that of all the tissues and substances in our body that he could have mentioned when he wanted to talk about cells carrying our genetic code, Dr. D'Adamo chose to focus on blood. Because any other part of the body, the brain, the liver, the big toe, any other tissue has more DNA than blood. In fact, blood contains the least amount of DNA of any part of the body. Blood is about 55% plasma, which contains virtually no DNA. And it's about 45% red blood cells, which, guess what, also contain no DNA. In fact, red blood cells are the only cells in the human body that don't have a nucleus and therefore don't contain our body's DNA. Blood also contains platelets, which also contain no DNA. So the only cells in our blood that do have a nucleus and therefore our DNA are the white blood cells, which make up less than 1% of the volume of blood. Does Dr. D'Adamo realize this? Even if he does, somehow I suspect he just doesn't care. I mean, hello, who was on the New York Times bestseller list? Who? Yes, Dr. D'Adamo, you were Dr. D'Adamo. And far be it for me to suggest that something as trivial as truth or facts should get in the way of your book sales. And Dr. D'Adamo has certainly sold a lot of books. I mean, why be content to have just one best-selling book based on your crappy theories when you can multiply your earnings with sequels? So after the success of Eat Right for Your Type, published in 1996, the good doctor published Cook Right for Your Type in 99, and then Live Right for Your Type in 2001, and then in 2006, the scintillating Aging, Fight It with the Blood Type Diet. And not forgetting all the supplementary books just for the type O's or the A's or the B's or whatever. And then, of course, there's the Complete Blood Type Encyclopedia for handy reference to all the piles of scheisse that Dr. D'Adamo produces. And Dr. D'Adamo even has an easy-to-use website where you can buy lots of herbs and vitamins and supplements and diet shakes and even a marvelous product called Deflect Lectin Blocking Formula. It says on the pack, Deflect A provides anti-adhesive therapy to blood type A lectin-sensitive individuals by blocking the effects of dietary lectins before they cause damage. Wow, there's money well spent. And rarely will you come across a better example of that old adage, garbage in, garbage out. Well, actually, probably not so rarely, because out there in the world there are lots and lots of people just like Dr. D'Adamo who sell diets and supplements and so-called alternative medicines and therapies and wonder cures, all based on spurious or simply made-up claims. Unfortunately, Dr. D'Adamo is just one example of thousands out there. And he's not the worst by any means. The worst of them sell what they know are useless products to people with serious illnesses just to make a profit, not caring if their victims live or die. Now, I wouldn't put Dr. D'Adamo in that category, But still, I think that what he's doing is morally reprehensible because he has had it pointed out to him on numerous occasions that his theories are scientifically unsound. But he goes on putting himself out there as some kind of scientific expert and making the same claims. Why? Well, I guess because he's making a lot of money from it. And the consequences are that a lot of people are following diets that are not necessarily good for their health. The most common blood type is type O. That's estimated to be about 46% of the world's population. And according to Dr. D'Adamo's diet theory, they're supposed to eat a lot of meat and little grain. Now, that doesn't sound too healthy. Not healthy for the humans, and not too good for the animals being eaten either. Now, more seriously though, Dr. D'Adamo, throughout his books, makes numerous references to combating certain diseases using the blood type diet. He's even written specific books on how to fight diabetes and cardiovascular disease based on the diet. Now, I haven't read those books, but if the advice they give is based on his flawed theories, then one imagines that they can't do much good and may even make people worse off than they were to begin with. And I mean, diabetes and cardiovascular disease, they're not trivial diseases. They're both serious and potentially life-threatening. But perhaps the most reprehensible advice Dr. D'Adamo gives is concerning vaccines. Dr. D'Adamo says, and I quote, "Type B children sometimes have severe neurological reactions to vaccinations." And he goes on to try to explain why type Bs react so badly to vaccines and posits that it's because vaccines cause the type B immune system to turn and attack its own tissues. He doesn't actually recommend that parents of type B children don't get them vaccinated, but one can easily imagine that statements like that would put a lot of parents off getting their kids vaccinated. And for what? For any good reason? No, just something that Dr. D'Adamo made up to fill a few more pages of his book. Well, I could go on for hours and hours about all the stupid and ridiculous and irritating things that Dr. D'Adamo says. Well, in fact, I have gone on for hours, but I could easily continue for hours more, but I won't. I'll end our analysis here. And I didn't even get into Dr. D'Adamo's amazingly insightful discussion of how blood type affects your personality. Now, there's some nice pseudoscience for you. But maybe in some future episode we'll come back to that and look particularly at Japan, where the belief that blood type determines your personality, a kind of astrology based on blood types, is extremely popular. But that will all be another day. So what was the point of all this, this long and detailed investigation into the blood type diet that's now extended over 4 episodes? Well, partly it's just to debunk the blood type diet. I hope that everyone listening is now thoroughly convinced that it has no scientific legitimacy to it whatsoever. But also, I wanted to demonstrate how tricky and complicated it can be sometimes to deal with pseudoscience, especially pseudoscience that at first glance seems plausible to most educated readers. As skeptics, we get confronted with all kinds of extraordinary claims. Now, some you can immediately dismiss as obviously absurd. For example, one of my favorites in this category is the conspiracy theory that the world is run by an alien race of shape-shifting lizard people. This theory is espoused by one-time BBC sports presenter David Icke, who believes that certain powerful people, including George W. Bush and the British royal family, are actually these reptilian humanoids or reptoids in disguise. And dear listener, you'd be surprised and depressed to find out that he actually has thousands of followers. Seriously. But anyway, claims like that are so ludicrous that they hardly warrant any serious investigation. And in fact, most of the people making those kind of claims are probably suffering from some certifiable psychiatric disorder. But claims on the other end of the spectrum that inhabit the borderlands where science meets pseudoscience, they are much harder to deal with and can't be dismissed out of hand. To find out if and how true they are, you actually have to do quite a lot of investigation and critical thinking. Now, I could have just dismissed Dr. Didamo's blood type diet out of hand as having no scientific validity, but I wanted to demonstrate the type of research and reasoning that you really have to go through before you can do that. And hopefully putting these podcasts out there will also serve as a reference to other people who are interested in investigating Dr. Didamo's claims. They won't have to reinvent the wheel, so to speak, as I will have done a lot of the groundwork for them. But at least that's it for Dr. Didamo. This is the last we'll hear from him, right? This is it, right? That's it for Dr. Didamo? Right? Well, yeah, for the time being it is, but I hate to tell you this, dear listener, but just last week I discovered that Dr. Didamo now has a new book out. It's called, you ready for this? The Genotype Diet. And the blurb on his website says, "The Genotype Diet uses the new science of epigenetics, which shows how environmental factors, including diet, allow you to change your genetic destiny. You can change the way your genes are expressed, in the same way you can affect light in a room by turning a switch on or off." Oh God, no, please. No, a whole new field of pseudoscience opens up before us. They're like moles in a game of whack-a-mole. You knock one down and another one just pops straight up. But I think that here on Reality Check, we'll bury Dr. Didamo for the time being. Be warned, though, it may not be the last you hear of him. Well, that brings us to the end of this special podcast-only edition of Reality Check. I hope you enjoyed the show. You can contact me, Tony Pittman, by emailing realitychecktony, that's T-O-N-Y, at gmail.com. And if you'd like to hear other episodes of Reality Check, visit our website at realitycheckonline.net. Or tune in live every Tuesday night at 10 o'clock on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne, Australia. Thanks for listening. See you later.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.